they had with us were those, I think it was three checks that we received from the corporation itself. Now, the one that is closer to me is the village corporation.
That's
my own village corporation, right. Because to me, Jalista is far away, and they've become further and further as the years go by. With the Chivak lands, the one that I belong to, we were told that we were supposed to have six townships. I used to follow the Land Claim Settlement Act real closely at the beginning, and I couldn't understand it anymore, so I don't really follow it anymore, but we were given to choose three townships in Chivak, three townships right in the immediate area, and three townships outside the Clarence Roads Wildlife Refuge. Now, Chivak is surrounded by the Clarence Roads Wildlife Refuge, and our hunting areas and our berry picking areas, our whole lifestyle is mostly in the Clarence Roads Wildlife Refuge. And one of the things I'd like to see is an exchange of lands where the villages acquire lands that they actually use. Whereas, for instance, we were told to choose three townships outside, further up in a place where we've never been, have never used. And
you think this should be a swap with the federal government?
Right. Yeah. We're willing to swap, but I don't know if the federal government is willing to swap, but I'd like to see that. And concerning the shares, I have three children that are newborns. And I've had some inheritance from deceased relatives on the shares. I wouldn't like to see the shares just around the sold. Maybe if a person has to share them, to sell them to natives instead of outside people. If the shares were sold outside of the native population or their if a person is married to the to a native person, maybe that make an exception for those people. But for big businesses and oil companies, now that stuff not to be, you know, because they have the money to buy all these shares. I'd rather see the shares stay in our area than outside interests. Doi.
Could I ask you a question? Your point about three different types of native people, some dependent almost 100% on subsistence,
mm-hmm.
others like yourself half and half, mm-hmm. others really urban. And you say that to lump them all together and make these choices somehow wouldn't be fair. When you say that there are these divisions, are you thinking that within some villages you have all three types of people, or are you thinking that some villages are in category A and some places like Bethel might be more like category C or Anchorage? Were you thinking of individual people or families or villages? Are there villages that you would say clearly are in category A, that is, that they're really subsistence, traditional places?
There's villages that are more so. I wouldn't put them in category A, B, C, and D, but I'd put them more, some villages more in category A than others, like Bethel or Antioch.
Well, let's take Bethel. Where would you put Bethel?
About half and half.
And where would you put a place like Chivak?
More subsistence.
Well, what would you put into category C, the urban?
Seattle.
I see. Right.
Dory?
Yeah, thank you very much. Ian. That was very, very, very helpful. Yes, yes, please.
We're from Bethel Native Corporation. My name is Ruth Richardson. This is Ron Baker, General Manager. I'm Chairman of the Board. We were, first of all, under the impression that you had canceled your trip to Bethel.
Well,
we actually didn't prepare anything, so we're going to have to go by the notes that we had formulated earlier.
Well, thank you for coming. I'm sorry there was confusion about this, but I didn't know until a couple of hours ago that we could even make it. So.
Yeah, the weather never cooperates when it needs to. The Board of Directors of Bethel Native Corporation got together and came up with some pros and cons of ANCSA that we have had to work with, and how, and just in our own experience with having to work with the Act. And first of all, I'll go with the pros, the good ones, since it's the shortest. First, the influx of money, I think, is a good thing. How can any corporation start out from nothing, and especially with no experience in corporations? So the influx of money to any corporation within Native Corporation, regional, or village. The land, definitely being able to acquire land. Mentioned earlier about shareholders having shares in the corporation and the corporation being the landholders for the shareholders. One day we hope to develop a land dispersal program for our shareholders. Definitely not all, but parcels of some sort. So making sure that our shareholders do own land, which not very many own now. Jobs were created with our corporation, not only through our construction company, short-term employment, but long-term within those construction projects that we worked on. As in, we have apartment buildings, office buildings, the hospital housing, different projects that our corporation worked on through our construction company. Development. What was development? We came up with this last week and...
That land, basically a lot of it has to do with our land development, our, of course, the Native Allotment Program, which is always an ongoing thing, and we feel we've been successful in providing many of the allotments and their surveys, and with final title to those, as well as our 14C program that's ongoing. Wally had mentioned our plans for shareholder home site, disposal programs. And plus the development of our lands in general. It's unfortunate we haven't a lot of core township land right now, but we do have a great deal of land outside the city of Bethel. And in that way, it's been quite successful for us, as by putting our individual projects on that land. We have to realize that Bethel Native Corporation land is primarily traditional cultural subsistence type land. We haven't got great amounts of trees for forest or minerals and such that can be developed. So our corporation has led more into the real estate, land development situations.
That's why I brought him along. Education, of course, into the big business aspect of corporations, having to deal with a lot of different types of businesses outside our own environment. And probably the most important part is self-respect, having our own identity, unity, not only within the region, but statewide. So those are the pros. Now the cons. Unfortunately, there's good and bad in everything. Competition, first of all, between native corporations and regional corporations, and village corporations versus other village corporations. Because of the lack of land, people or the village corporation selecting land over, as in Chivac's case, having to select outside their area. Regional versus village on who would control the subsurface, who would control any type of local development of that land if subsurface came into the development. And of course the same old no communication with the writers and the affected people, consequently ignorance in the beginning. A lot of native corporations, village corporations, I'm sure, has gone bankrupt. Fortunately, we have not. But very little participation by the affected of the act. And of course, it's unclear from the beginning, and it's still unclear, I feel. Everyone comes up with a different interpretation at times. And consequently, BNC has suffered through that, through quite a bit of litigation and different interpretations of the 14C3 and C1 sections. And no preparation of our corporations for having to fight that type of litigation and having to rely on lawyers, which we've paid quite handsomely. And then the uncertainty of 1991 and having a deadline to work with and looking at the same problems that came up when they were writing the act. Again, no participation of the affected, unless the local regional village corporations have done something. The Upriver Corporation is very active in the 1991 issues. Our AVCP had a real good convention up there, maybe you had attended. And BNC sponsored mini convention last couple, 3 or 4 months ago. So it's just, we've had speakers there, but it's not structured. Actually getting down to writing what the changes might be within the act. I have to disagree with Jolie Morgan on his suggestion of pooling the stock of any deceased. I feel being able to leave them to who you wish. This is a Western type corporation set up. Let's just leave it the Western type. Being able to leave your shares to whom you wish. Probably the biggest issue, aside from the land bank and stock alienation for 1991, we felt the preservation of the cultural values be continued and play a very important part in any changes that we have that have to come up. Ron?
Yeah, I'd like to, you know, maybe point out, of course, that, you know, there was a law that was enacted, so that, you know, of course, was, you know, had given us a tool in which we could continue with. In 1991, of course, you were given the option of wanting to go profit or non-profit. That our village decided to go with the for-profit corporation, and, you know, thus we've continued to do so. We feel BNC has been more progressive than other corporations, thus maybe our lots of litigation that we have gone into. We've had to feel out many portions of the act, being it is rather unclear. And of course, leading towards 1991, which many folks think of it as this big rolling rock or the big dark cloud. I sometimes don't think that's entirely true. I think people do need to keep a positive attitude toward it. And instead of talking repeal of the law and this sort of thing, law can certainly be changed. This takes the right people to do so, and the know-how, and the attitude, the positive attitude that it would take to do it. The state has been rather diversified for the most part. In many sections, many corporations have simply taken their money and land and put it in the bank and draw interest. We, of course, have tried to develop our assets and to provide the maximum amount of earning power that each share may have for those shareholders. We've certainly tried to develop in a way to provide our shareholders with something, and we're certainly leading in that direction. The deadline of 1991 does tend to pose some problems, and we feel that, of course, stock and land are the two biggest issues. You know, we want to retain our land and keep it in shareholders' hands, and we also want to do the same with the stock. Of course, there's been many ideas. We've talked about a few, you know, in how to do that, but mainly we've been relying a lot on what our cohorts have been doing around the state and the different ideas, and we've been sitting back watching and listening, and we're quite confident that, you know, there is going to be some very definite solutions in which are going to be amiable amongst all the Native people.
And that's well, could I ask you, you said that you disagreed with Mr. Morgan about the question whether shares at death should simply go into a pool, or a person should have the right to say, no, I'm going to leave my shares to Uncle Bob or my son or my daughter or something. What about the question of the right that whether people should have the right after 1991 to sell their shares? Should there be restrictions on the sale of shares? I know this question is still being considered by AFN and others, but do you have any ideas, any views on that?
I think our board of directors feel real protective of our stock for our shareholders. We did try to start a first right of refusal program for our stock, our shareholders, come 1991. And then the question of will we be able to afford it when that come about. I would hope that maybe I'll get in trouble with a lot of people that want to sell, but I would hope that some restrictions are put on that not be able to sell their stock.
You said, do you have any idea how people in your corporation feel just meeting them around town? Does anybody express strong views on this one way or the other?
BNC has come a long way in a real hard struggle. And right now, with the economy as it is, that money is tight for everyone. And as soon as people feel that they can sell their stock, I've heard a lot of them say, yes, they're going to. And But I think once they, once BNC starts giving dividends, hopefully soon, they'll see the value. They'll see the value in land that, as shareholders, and hopefully not sell.
What about employing shareholders? How have you made out in that regard?
Good, really good. We've got maintenance people. Shareholders that come back from school have applied for different positions within the corporation. And we started a program, a scholarship program for ongoing education for shareholders, hoping they'd come back to work in, within the corporation. But the main goal of the the board of directors is to hire shareholders first.
Anything else? That's pretty much covered it for us.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much for coming down. I'm glad you were able to make it.
And you too.
My name's Ron Hoffman. I'm a shareholder within the Julista Corporation and also the Kuskokwim Corporation. I think all shareholders should ask these questions. What did the corporation benefit individual shareholders? Basically, I could tell you the truth that to me, it really haven't done much good of anything. I receive approximately $50 from the regional corporation, and I received approximately $1,000 from our village corporation. However, the other communities aren't as wasn't as successful as that, and I didn't receive any land. The only thing I have is the 100, the shares that I have with the regional corporation and also the village corporation. So that's basically that's all I more or less inherited from the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. And basically I see that as not as beneficial to me anyway. It's just that, again, getting back to the corporations, what exactly do they benefit the people in the region? They haven't provide any labor. They haven't provide any social services programs or anything in that nature. The only persons that basically benefit from this act was the lawyers, the persons that are in charge of the regional corporations, regional corporations, and the people that are in the villages, they haven't benefit whatsoever, and it's been 15 years now, and we haven't seen anything, and we just got only six more. So for sure, by 1991, you'll see that the majority of the people or the shareholders within the corporation will still never benefit from the corporations, either financially or even though, the land situation especially. And I understand that, if 1991 comes about and the stocks are more or less open on an open market. And for sure, I could foresee a lot of individuals selling their shares to large oil companies and whatnot due to the fact that they did not benefit from the act itself. And within that nature, you could see that the control goes into or a different hand or a different group of individuals. Therefore, you would not see, you will see a lot of restrictions on land. You will see the land being teared up, exploration of oil companies and whatnot. So that's basically what I foresee will happen should no restriction the corporation or the government takes in regards to 1991. The way they set it up is kind of unique anyway. And primarily, I haven't benefited to the act itself. And I'm sure and I'm positive that every other local or the village residents will tell you the same. I keep close watch on village corporations. They themselves haven't provided any services whatsoever to their shareholders, either through funds or stocks or shares. I have a child too that was born prior to 71. Therefore, she isn't eligible to receive any.
After.
Thank you. She's not therefore eligible to receive any shares within the corporation. And basically, I guess you could say that she doesn't have no representation other than herself. I know the Alaska Federation of Natives have been looking to alternatives in trying to include those individuals that were born after that particular date.
What do you think should be done about all this? Do you obviously think the children born since 1971 should be included in the settlement? What about the question whether people should have the right to sell their shares after 1991?
I think there should be some limitation to that effect. Due to the fact that there are some individuals that will not want to sell their shares. Therefore, the majority of the people might want to sell their shares, and there should be some kind of restrictions, amended to the Alaska Native, to the 1991 issue anyway, so that we more or less can protect the shares and the land, primary land. And basically, we would have some local control of our natural resources and whatever is available within our corporations. That's basically it, I guess.
Oh, thanks very much. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Can I ask you a question? How easy is it for a regional or village corporation to institute a policy or regulation into corporate rules allowing them the right of first refusal, the right to purchase the stocks should a shareholder want to sell?
Well, the question is whether the corporation can establish a policy giving itself the right of first refusal. I think that there are amendments to ANCSA in force now that allow corporations, hello there, that allow corporations to amend their articles of association to require that they be given the right of first refusal. But as the chairman of the board of BNC pointed out, that's fine to do, but then when the shareholder comes to you and says, I've got an offer from Shell Oil for so much for my shares, I'm coming to you because you've got the right to match it. Well, it seems to me a lot of the corporate people, the native corporation people, have come to the conclusion that that particular provision doesn't really get them very far. It may be just a way of forcing their shareholders, if they do get an offer, to come to the corporation just at least to have a discussion about whether they really want to do this. But if some outside corporation comes along and starts making a tender for these shares, I don't think there's any corporation, any native corporation in Alaska that really could match that kind of thing. They'd have to put everything they own up as collateral, borrow money from the bank to compete, and it seems to me that that provision, and it's already in the law, isn't awfully helpful. But yes, please.
My name is Rachel Imgabra, and I'm from Hooper Bay. And during the time they gave land allotments to the natives, it was all of a sudden, and there was a lot of confusion who's going to get land and who's not. And through my father's interpretations, he said that the only people who are going to get land were adults, and I wasn't able to get any land. And on the second time, they were going to give land allotments to the other people. I was out of town, and there was no way to inform me that they had a second chance. And now that I have children of my own who were born after 1971, and to me that's leaving them out in the cold, and they will have to fight for themselves to get shares. And there's 7 in the family, and I don't think there's any way to give land allotments to each individual.
Just so I don't misunderstand you, you mentioned allotments and then shares. Are you a shareholder?
Yes.
In Hooper Bay?
Mm-hmm.
And in Chilista?
Yes.
But you didn't get a native allotment?
Mm-mm.
Well, a lot of people missed out on native allotments if you didn't file your papers on or before December 18th, 1971, they wouldn't even consider your application. So that must be what happened to you. You were too young then, I gather. Your father thought you were too young to file. Was that what happened?
It was his interpretation.
Yeah.
No, there was a lot of confusion.
Well, you didn't have to be 18. I know there was a lot of confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the trouble is that if you didn't file before December 19th, 1971, they just won't listen to you. And the people, literally thousands, who did file in time, they're still waiting for their allotments to be processed. I mean, there's a lot of folks who were left out, just as you were. Well, you could pass on your shares to your children, even though you don't have an allotment to pass on to them.
Yes, but if those land allotments are lost, and our parents are dead, and there is no, I guess they wouldn't, legal services wouldn't think that you're telling the truth or not.
Well, did your parents get an allotment?
They do, but they're still, I guess, in the waiting process.
Oh, they're still waiting. Well, maybe they'll get it.
But they ask a lot of questions, whether they have camps or traps and stuff, how much they pay for buying traps.
Well, if, you know, your parents have probably talked to a lawyer, but if you want to talk to a lawyer, you should talk to Dave Fleury of Legal Services in Anchorage. He's the expert on allotments. He's testified at this commission. And when we have questions about allotments, we send them to him. His name is Dave Fleury, F-L-E-U-R-Y, Legal Services Anchorage. And he actually comes out to places like Bethel to, you know, to talk to people. So you should phone him if you think you really need help or your parents do. I can't help you. All I can say is that if you didn't get in on time, it's too late. And if you phone Dave Fleury, tell him I suggested you call.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Oscar Quagley, and I'm a shareholder of Chilista and also the Bethel Native Corporation. One of the things that bothers me about ANCSA, and I think the disadvantages outweigh the advantages as far as ANCSA is concerned, and the manner in which we were purportedly given land and money for some of the land that we lost as a result of ANCSA. I think Congress and a whole lot of people that were in positions to make a decision forgot all about our valid existing rights as a people. They were looking out for the valid existing rights of the miners, the homesteaders, and everybody else, trappers, and whoever had access to land. Those that have grown up where organization is very important and ownership of land is important, which to us was not the way that we operated. And not only the valid existing rights as far as the land was concerned, but also I think one of the questions now that has to be resolved before too long has to do with sovereignty or the tribal government, which would give a vehicle for putting your land under that system. And I think the U.S. Congress has forgotten the U.S. Constitution as well as many laws that have given us the right to tribal sovereignty, and yet now they're refusing to even acknowledge that Alaskan villages are or should be allowed to set up their own tribal governments. And I think the resolution of that particular issue has to come about because for us to gain a certain degree of self-determination, we'll call it Yupik self-determination since I'm in Yupik country, and self-sufficiency, we have to have a certain amount of freedom from all the strife and all the legal battles and things that always keep us off balance. We never get to the position where we're directly upright. So I think that sovereignty is a very, very important question for us to try to resolve. Then there's a couple of other comments that I would like to talk about. And I know that our educational system has been in place for about a century, but it has failed us very dismally bad, because amongst my peers there were hardly any people that had either a bachelor's or a master's degree, and for a century we have what, two doctors that we can claim from our region, and we don't have any engineers, we don't have any people that go into these professions, and it's, I think we've got to be thinking along those lines as a people again. And we have to be taking a look at our diminishing resources. We're not putting into place any way of replacing, like the fish. And certainly our people, I've always said, were really excellent as far as behavioral sciences are concerned. And they know animal and bird behavior. And let's take some of those natural talents that our people have and start to develop. For instance, going out there and taking a look at the wildlife refuge where all the geese and ducks lay their eggs. What are the predators? How come the productivity of the bird laying is diminishing? What's causing the wildlife resources to dwindle so fast? We know what part of it is, because there's more people that are demanding it commercially and also in the subsistence way. We have plenty of lakes out here. Why not take a look at Whitefish Lake and see what makes the whitefish thrive, and then work on some of our lakes. And so those types of things that we have to begin to think about in our education for the people. And they don't have to have big, high degrees. They can be given the research tools, the technology, to be able to get into these. And once we do, then I think we'll be a lot better off as far as self-sufficiency is concerned. But as long as we're always kept off balance and we don't really have any say as to what happens within our own region, and outside forces, big companies, multinational companies, have a lot of influence. And I think as long as they keep us off balance, we will continue to be a people that is gradually dying off. I think for our region, and from what I've seen from the Canada and Greenland, well, Greenland's maybe a little bit ahead of us as far as their own native tongue is concerned, but I think Chilista region is the one area where our culture and our language, which is the voice of the culture, is very strong. And I'm very happy to see that. And I won't say anything more about the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, especially the problems, because you've heard quite a number in regards to the shares and the kids born thereafter. But I think that self-government and tribal government is one vehicle that would be in any way that you might be able to help in getting the word across, even at the UN level, because there's a lot of other countries, third worlds and indigenous people that are taking a look at us. And you're well aware of what Nunavut gained from their land claims. And of course, they've had a chance to take a look at what we lost, our Aboriginal title, our Aboriginal hunting and fishing rights, purportedly extinguished as a result of ANCSA. Those didn't happen with the Canadians, so we need to keep in mind those types of things. Bayana.
Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Quagley. What's your official position in the, you're with the school district?
Yes, Lower Kuskokwim School District Native Education Department Director.
Just for the record, Mr. Quagley is Native Education Department Director, Lower Kuskokwim School District. I appreciate what you said about education.
Commissioner Berger, my name is Tony Vasca. I don't have an official position as of yet, currently unemployed, but I would like to take a different tact in explaining my personal views of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, as well as some of the views of a lot of people I've heard in the last 14 years, but especially in the last 5 or 6 years. Given what your charges with the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, it seems to me that where you place the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act in the history of the United States government's relations with Native peoples in the United States, it seems to me that the place we take is in line with a lot of the public policy decisions that the U.S. Congress takes over the years. And if you look at the public policy that the United States Congress has taken, it seems to me that whenever it comes to the point of making a decision concerning Native peoples, those decisions are made based on what the current knowledge is at that particular time.